Enjoy all your favorite sports like never before at BetMGM. Sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. When you register with BetMGM, you'll get instant access to a variety of parlay selection features, live betting options, and the best daily promotions in the business. And with BetMGM at your fingertips, every play and every game matters more than ever. Place your money line, prop, or parlay bets with the king of sportsbooks today. Sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. BetMGM and GameSense remind you to play responsibly. 21 plus and present in Ohio, subject to eligibility requirements. Rewards are non-withdrawable bonus bets that expire in 7 days. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER in partnership with MGM Northfield Park.
Say, I'm disturbed.
From city to city, an incredible hysterical panic spread.
I think we're getting into a weird area here.
Will you tell these fools I'm not crazy?
This hysteria.
You can't handle the truth.
Brain is gone.
This is Hysteria 51.
We're here.
The truth is out there.
It's alive.
But you won't find it here.
They're coming for you. Look, there comes one of them now.
Welcome in, Hysteria Nation, to the podcast that doesn't write any anonymous, threatening, or vilifying letters. This is Hysteria 51.
That's right. We take credit for every single one.
Yeah, like you couldn't read it right.
I know you are, but what am I?
The anonymous part is what he was keen in on there. We are broadcasting from the lower fourth dimension, otherwise known as Chicago. I'm your host, John Goforth, and alongside is my co-host and the man voted in high school most likely to go to jail for a crime he didn't commit, Mr. Brent Hand.
Thanks, John. And you got that backwards. It was most likely for a crime I did commit. That was back in my vigilante days, if you remember.
Stealing catalytic converters doesn't make you a vigilante.
No, but destroying annoying robots might. Maybe we should find out, John. Maybe we should find out.
Good idea. Kyle, get in here.
Cheese muffins.
All right. For those of you new to the show, the glorified speak and spell that Brent has been arguing with is Conspiracy Bot. Brent built him in his lab to help write and produce the show. Instead, he just drinks too much and annoys us. Apparently, he can't write either.
Well, I taught him the alphabet with a word zapper from Nildatari, so he's got room for improvement, I think is the best way to say it.
That explains a lot, actually. Anyway, the other voice you heard is Kyle, Conspiracy Bot's pet project and lover of fattening carbohydrates.
But in all honesty, who doesn't love some fattening carbohydrates?
Too true. Yeah. Too true.
I can literally hear you assholes getting fatter. Let's get back to more important things, like me.
Did you have something you actually wanted to cover? Something to actually contribute to this show?
John, thank you so much for asking. I do. That was for all of you, both here in the room and listening at home, or in jail. You know, where most of my listeners are.
That's it. I'm going to turn them off for the rest of the fucking day.
Wait. I have something else for you guys. Doing research for this week's show has inspired me. I want a pen pal.
So let me get this straight. Researching a topic about secretive letters that led to incarceration, public humiliation, and likely someone's death, that inspired you to want a pen pal.
Yep.
That checks out.
Makes sense. Yep.
So I want to invite the listeners to write to me and I'll pick a favorite. That meat sack will be my new pen pal.
That sounds like a terrible idea, but I'll bite. Let's talk logistics. How exactly will you get any letters?
Easy. Send it to your house. Address it to Brand Hand, care of Conspiracy Bot. The street address is...
Sorry about that, folks. Had to take a quick break to handle some business.
And by business, he means duct taping the robot's mouth shut.
Yeah, we don't need any more stalkers. My trees are full on the outside of my house. The ones near the windows, at least. All joking aside, though, if you want to be C-Bot's pen pal, you can write to him, just not at my home address. send your note to Cbot, just in case he wants to pick you as his pen pal, I guess. You can email him at cbot@hysteria51.com. God, that is probably stupid to give him an email, but there you go.
Incoming, not outbound.
Yeah.
And again, Cbot, cbot@hysteria51.com.
This probably isn't one of our smarter things, kind of like having people pay to sniff you, but hey, I'm you know, we'll see. We'll see.
What I can't decide is what's going to be worse, whatever he says to the people that he decides to respond to.
Or...
law. The lawsuits that result from therein.
Right?
In my book, it's a win-win either way.
That's not how that works.
I see he got the duct tape off.
I don't think the duct tape really works when he's just a speaker. I didn't really think that went through. But if you're sending things, try to keep them civil. Don't try to get anyone killed, because that is kind of like what we're talking about this week. It's the poison of a pen. At least that's what they chose to call it on a show that we're going to be talking about again this week. And we'll get to that in a second. John, they always say sticks and stones break your bones, but fucking words, they do more harm, it seems, than anything else in the world.
It's true.
Not in my experience.
That probably tracks, because, you know, he does carry a baseball bat. We should have never let him watch Negan on The Walking Dead.
And not only that, he's not exactly a poet. I mean, he's no Shakespeare with words, so it would make sense that he can cause more trouble physically than he can verbally.
That's true. Anyway, we have a case of harassment, attempted murder. Or at least death that they attribute to murder, and an unknown author orchestrating it all. I wish I could make thunder with my fingers. And for a change,
you know, that was my nickname in high school, Thunder with his fingers.
Yeah, I remember the boys track team always called you that for some reason. And for a change, though, we have quotes galore for the people involved and the investigators, since there has been a ton of people that have went over this case and conducted interviews. And speaking of cover it and speaking of the TV show I was talking about, we dive back into the Unsolved Mysteries coffers this week, John. This one they covered in season 7. That's season 7 with Robert Stack, not the Farina years. And they called it the Poison Pen Murders, which is a good name. We couldn't steal it because it's already been used. Get this, though. They did it because they themselves received a letter supposedly from the unknown author of the Circleville letters in December of 93. Literally their office. It read, "Forget Circleville, Ohio. If you come to Ohio, you El Sickos will pay." Signed, the Circleville writer.
And we're sure Cbot wasn't around in 1993, correct?
No one fucks with the Stack.
Amen. Amen to that.
Many feel the writer was never found because Robert Stack beat him to death with a large woolen topcoat.
You know, normally I tell him to shut up, but I'll allow that one. I'm going to allow
it. Yep. We like the Stack on this show.
Anyway, the letter was just a follow-up to many that had started the whole ton of shit that happened back in the 70s. John, tell us what happened in the sleepy town. I don't even know what's sleepy, but that's just a way they always start these stories. The sleepy town of Circleville, Ohio.
Ooh, I'll take it one further. The sleepy hamlet.
Ooh.
Yeah.
The sleepy moons over my hammy. Now I'm hungry.
Back to fattening carbohydrates. Yeah. Okay, kids. So this week's topic, the Circleville letters, the Circleville writer, it's also referred to as, started in 1976. A journalist that later looked into the whole story named Martin Yant tells us of the kickoff of the whole mess.
Now, real quick, he's going to be someone that we get a lot of quotes from him because he did a really good investigation and write-ups on this, so... kudos to him, and we'll hear from him a lot throughout this whole episode.
Yep. Good job, Martin.
Yeah. Thanks for doing our work for us, Martin.
Yes. Well, I mean, if we've demonstrated anything over 200 plus episodes, it's that we prefer someone to do our work for us.
Amen.
All right. Quote, Martin says, "The first letter was received by Mary Gillespie, a school bus driver, telling her that the letter writer was aware that she was having an affair with the superintendent of schools and that it had better stop."
Man, I can't believe she fell for it. I was just grasping at straws.
And I'm back to telling him to shut up. Just shut up, dude.
Now, no good accusatory letter is worth a shit without threats.
That's just asshole 101, John. That's just...
It's true.
It's easy.
So yeah. It went on to say, I know where you live. I've been observing your house and know you have children. This is no joke. Please take it serious.
I'll fucking kill you. Please believe me.
Now, the envelope was postmarked Columbus, Ohio, which is about 30 miles away from Circleville. There was no return address, no signature inside, and no way to tell who had sent it.
Now, remember, this was 1976. 30 miles might as well have been a lifetime away.
People were still
far.
Using cart and buggy
right.
at this point.
Like, you started the journey, by the time you get there, you're a whole different group, another generation.
Yeah, I mean, you ate a couple people along the way. Yeah.
Remember they used to call it the Columbus Trail?
It's true. About a week later, Mary received another letter with a similar tone. But she made a decision here to keep them to herself. So it was alleging an affair, and she did not share it with her husband.
Well, I mean, who hasn't gotten I'm going to tell your wife you're having, or your husband I'm having an affair letters? I mean, daily, right?
I haven't, Brent.
Oh, shit. Remember when all those online dating things went down? I forget what they were called. Every person who had bought a email list that wasn't even on those sites were sending out shit like, we know you were on there. We're going to tell your
story. Oh, just you're talking about the cheating websites that somebody, was it WikiLeaks? It WikiLeaks got the list of somebody like WikiLeaks, I don't know who.
But they were just sending shit out to everyone with an email address. We know you're on there just in case, trying to get people to like fucking pay them money and stuff like that.
Oh, yeah. The scams. But in all actuality, like the user list of one of those big ones went out wide, right?
Ashley Madison, who offered to advertise on our show, we said thank you, but no thank you.
Yeah, that is true. That is a fact. So... back to the story at hand. Mary did not share these letters with her husband. However, her husband, named Ron, received a letter himself a few days or a week later. And according to Martin Yant, this letter addressed to Ron Gillespie told him that if he didn't do something to stop this affair, that his life was undoubtedly in danger.
Oh, shit. Yeah, man, and she's not alone. Now we're this was kind of like the brunt of it, because this was, as you'll see here soon, why this was such an important case. But many people receive letters, and the tie that binds is they were very sexually explicit. Well, the tie that binds is they were all from the same person, handwriting, you know, show that they were the same and stuff. But sexually explicit and contained what they called intimate secrets no one should know. This person was the gossiping ninny around town that knew everything and was just sending out letters left and right. Did anyone look into Miss Cleo? What was she doing at that time? Do we know? Write me now. She's just going to town.
She was actually working on her voodoo doll collection at that time.
I get it. I got one of those.
Of course you do.
Actually, in all actuality, she was probably auditioning for off-Broadway plays at that point.
Hi, my name is
Didn't we find
Carol?
Out later that she was an actress?
Yeah. I can't believe we found out that she wasn't on the up and up.
Yeah, I know.
If
shocking.
I can't trust my 900 number gypsies and voodoo practitioners, just who can I trust?
I mean, what is this world coming to?
Yeah.
So, Brent, back to the
Circleville letters.
Yeah, the Circleville letters. The Gillespies received more letters.
Yeah, I didn't just stop. Yeah.
Yeah, the next letter read, in part, Gillespie, you have had 2 weeks and done nothing. Make her admit the truth and inform the school board. If not, I will broadcast it on CBS, posters, signs, and billboards until the truth comes out. Why CBS? Like, why not the other channels? I just...
because everyone knows CBS.
The Circleville writer was actually a huge Matlock fan, and Perry Mason. I don't know what would be appropriate of the Perry Mason would be too early, Matlock would be too late. What was on in the '70s? I don't know.
Back in '76, Walter Cronkite was the anchor. So I mean, he's gonna call up his old buddy Walt, old Wally.
Oh, that makes sense. So the Circleville writer is sitting there in Circleville, Ohio, saying, "Huh, who would carry the story for me if I needed to let the world know that this school bus driver was having an affair with the superintendent?
I'll tell you who. That Walter fucking Cronkite. Maybe it That's was right. Walter Cronkite. Did anyone look? Where was he in 1970?
What was he doing? Ooh.
Walter, real quick question. Why do you spend all your free time in Columbus, Ohio mailing stuff? Don't you fucking worry about it. That was his real voice. A lot of people don't know. Don't you fucking worry about it.
That's what Cronkite actually sounded like.
Not everyone hears my real voice, but I got to go on the news tonight. And I'm going to be out of town mailing some things. As soon as
John F. Kennedy is dead.
Excuse me.
Senselessly murdered in the heartland.
There will be a new president of the United States.
Who the fuck is that? Is that Dan Rather? it's like when who was the one that had the real Tom Brokaw? I'm Tom Brokaw, you know. And then he gets off him. Thanks, guys. My voice was cut out. I'm real glad to be done with this.
Walter slash Tom, why do you sound like a weird version of Sideshow?
They
Bob?
All grew up together. I don't know if you know that or not. That's why they sound so similar.
In the same house.
Yeah.
We have gotten far astray from the story, Brent.
You can never get far astray if Walter Cronkite is your sounding post.
It's true. So, regardless of Walter Cronkite's involvement, there were some other folks involved. Mary and Ron told three people about the letters. Ron's sister, her husband Paul Freshour, and Paul's sister.
Yeah.
So I'm taking this slowly because there winds up being a lot of characters in this story.
So she tells them this though because she thinks she knows who's sending him. She's got a pretty good idea in her head who's doing him. She believed that the writer was another school bus driver named David Longberry because it is a cutthroat business. You know what I'm talking about? You know. They got to stop at every railroad track, pick up every kid. Man, it's a job. I'm not downplaying it. I'm sure it actually is. And in those towns, there's only so many of them. It's probably a coveted position.
I mean, enough so that you engage in harassment and potential murder.
Shit, I've killed for less.
Cats don't count.
Yeah, well. So Mary, though, she believed that David was angry over a past rejection that, you know, he'd tried to bang her and she's like, no, thank you. And he'd taken to writing the letters to express his frustration. So she's got a plan. This cat named Paul Freshour. So this is Ron Gillespie's brother-in-law. He said, here's a quote. We thought we'd scare the guy who they thought was the writer, you know, David. So we sent him four or five letters only. There was no violence in them or anything, just that we knew who he was and what he was doing, and we sent him the letters.
I don't know. Listen. I am not going back to our original theme of vigilanteism. I am not exactly a vigilante, but I think if I honestly believed that the person that was threatening physical harm, I guess they hadn't threatened physical harm yet, had they?
No,
the person that was threatening my family
said they didn't threaten
in one way, shape, or form. The person who would not go. Okay, this person is threatening my wife and myself.
Oh no, he had made veiled attempts. I'm sorry, the Circleville writer had bad right. things are going to happen.
Yeah. So this person who had threatened, whether it's physically or not, threatened my family. I don't think my next reaction is to write them a sternly worded letter back.
Dearest asshat,
if you write three or four more of these, we're gonna have problems.
I hope this letter finds you unwell. Ooh,
unwell.
The sickest of burns.
Burn.
I hope this letter finds you unwell.
Shut up, Walter.
News at 11. It seemed to work because they stopped for a bit. It seems though, then the guy, the girl, we don't know, whoever, switched. The way that they were going about it a little bit. Because indecent signs began to circulate around Circleville.
Like signs, like placards on the side
yeah,
of the road signs.
Shit you'd see like, you know, vote for so-and-so, but or like we buy houses with a name scribbled or a number scribbled, you know.
Free
so,
dirt.
Yeah. So a lot of these signs accused Gordon Massey of having a sexual relationship with Ron and Mary's 12-year-old daughter. So Gordon Massey's another name we're throwing at you, and then Ron and Mary had a 12-year-old. So they're having
sex. That I guess we haven't been clear about that. Let's back up for a second. when we originally were talking about infidelity in these letters, the accusation was that the superintendent of schools, who is Gordon Massey, that's the name that we just said, was the person engaging in it with Mary.
Yeah, now they're saying also the 12-year-old daughter is involved. This is outside of the shit that he's sending to other people. We're just focusing on this one family. Then on August 19th of 1977, Ron gets a phone call, and this is the turning point. Nobody then or still to this day knows who was on the other end. I don't know why they didn't reverse the phone, you know, to find out what happened. Whoever called him pissed Ron off.
Yeah, you can. The supposition here is that at least one person knew who was on the other end. Ron.
Right. And he alluded to it was the Circleville person, the writer. So after hanging up the phone, he grabs his pistol and took off in his car. He grabbed his phone. And here's a quote. They said he told his children he was going out to confront the letter writer. He took his weapon. He did not seem to be drunk, said goodbye to his children and went out. Now that.
Yeah. So apparently he kissed his daughter on the forehead. Like there was interaction.
Yeah. Within a short distance at an intersection that he knew very well, because he's through there all the time, he lost control of his vehicle, hit a tree, and was killed. Somewhere in between leaving the house, though, and hitting the tree, his gun had fired one shot. There was never any explanation for when or how or at whom the gun had been fired at. Fucking A. So the police, of course, they're going to do an investigation of this. They talked to one suspect, and then they ruled Ron Gillespie's death as an accident. And, of course, the Circleville letter, or not letter, but the Circleville residents received anonymous letters accusing the sheriff of a cover-up. That's funny. The dude is out trying to kill this guy, and then he dies, and the Circleville guy's like, man, they're not doing a very good job of this at all.
You need to investigate that shit more. Another thing that's worth noting is in one of the police reports, it says that he had a blood alcohol level 0.16, which was around 1.5 times the legal limit, which his family found really odd because they all said the same thing. He wasn't a big drinker and certainly was not drunk when he left the house.
Yeah, they said his children said he hadn't had a drink that day, period, full stop. They were with him.
So the phone rings. He argues with someone. People can hear him arguing. He gets very angry, kisses his daughter on the forehead, says goodbye to the family, has his gun with him, and within minutes is dead from a car accident. And somewhere in the intervening time, fired off a single round at or who we don't know.
So between with this happening and then Paul Freshour, who was Ron's brother-in-law, had talked to the sheriff. And then when the sheriff came out and gave his official statement, Paul says the sheriff changed his story. His quote is, the sheriff agreed with me that there was foul play, and then when I contacted him again, he changed his attitude completely. Then he was telling me that it wasn't foul play and the suspect had passed a polygraph test, the person they were talking to, and you know they just blamed it on him being drunk, which the family said there's no way he wasn't a drinker, and especially that day we were with him, he wasn't fucking drinking.
And not to add further complexity to the story, but the whole backdrop of this when we're talking about the sheriff, according to Freshour, the sheriff was up for some sort of national sheriff award or national sheriff position, and the only way he could get this national, like the National Association for Sheriffs, I don't know, whatever it's called, the only way he could get this is if the crime rate was pretty low in his area. Yeah. So Freshour alleges that the sheriff was doing a lot of this kind of cover-up stuff because if this guy died as a drunk driver, that doesn't go against his crime record. If he died as a result of some sort of nefarious foul play, it does.
Unlike the non-nefarious foul play that we... Shenanigans.
That's true.
Shenanigans.
That's just weird. That's just the weird shit we're into. But every time the sheriff comes up in this story, at least Paul Freshour would have you keep in mind that he might have ulterior motives in the decisions he makes and what he says and
right.
does.
Which, you know, the human condition, who knows?
Yeah.
We got one man dead, though. He's already gone, and the letters keep coming. His wife is still alive, and the superintendent of the schools, they do eventually admit to having a relationship. But get this shit! Said it began after the letters were sent. Ah, great idea. Let's bone just to make sure no one's a liar. You know,
that's what Mary said. Now, there are plenty of quotes from Mary's sister-in-law, mm-hmm. Karen, from other friends of Mary, and from other folks that have just witnessed it. They said that this affair was going on for a long time.
Right. Now, I'm just saying she said, yeah,
she said that, but they used to meet. Like, at one point, they were going to go to Florida, and he was going to fly down. She was fucking this dude.
That's why these letters were sent, period. You don't go, full stop. These letters accusing me of this ruined my life and killed my husband. I better go fuck this man.
Yeah.
Maybe you do. I don't want to kink shame somebody, but hey, you know, go to town.
Exactly. And I mean, I guess we can never confirm anything 100%, but I fully believe that the reason this all started was the affair that was happening.
Well, it did come out, and guess what? She kept her job driving a school bus because people just didn't care, and she'd already lost her husband at that time. So, beginning in 1983, the letter writer began putting signs along her bus route. And again, at this time, Mary's daughter was being targeted, saying horrible things about her.
Think about this. I mean, we aren't into the half of the story yet, and we're already 7 years into the story. Yeah,
this is going
seven years.
So get this shit. According to Yant, the investigator, Mary finally had enough. Finally. I mean, sure, my husband's dead and all this shit, but now I'm done. Now. Okay. So... quote, she ripped the sign down, is what she said.
She pulled the bus over, There was a sign and was going to rip it out of the ground.
And guess what? Behind the sign was a box and a string and another post. Long story short, there was a booby trap, and it was set so that if she grabbed the sign, a gun would have shot and killed her. And it just so happened that it didn't go off because she didn't do it the way it was planned.
Yeah, they said that I don't know what direction it was set up, but she pulled the sign left, and she would have needed to pull it right in order for the gun to fire.
And investigators discovered that someone had tried to rub the serial number off the weapon, but get this, when lab tests were able to read it accurately, guess who it belonged to? Mary's brother-in-law, Paul Freshour. Spoiler, Paul denied any involvement. And this story is
Wait,
crazy.
Can we go back to the booby trap for 1 second? Yeah. Is there anything else that sounds more like a Wile E. Coyote and Roadrunner cartoon than that?
Well, she did say there was a pile of bird seed at the bottom of it too. So
that's what the sign said, bird seed here. The sign said bird seed here.
Well, she assumed it was a targeting daughter. All it said was meep meep on there, so she put two and two together.
Oh, I have news to report. Okay.
Like we said, though, Paul denied any involvement. Here's a quote from him. He said, "I admitted the gun was mine, but I hadn't seen it in a long time. Had no reason to check on it or anything, and I don't know when it had come up missing. I really don't know what happened to it, and I told them that, and that's the truth, and that's how it was."
And so the sheriff said, "Fine, let's just go look for the gun at your house." And so Paul agreed, mm-hmm. and they went to the house, and the gun was gone, obviously. Because
now, if you not use
custody.
Your gun all the time or something like that, you might not realize if something's gone. I know that sounds way more nefarious than it has to, but that's just the way things go. Let's think about your baseball
bat. Do you check
on
all your possessions that are inside of boxes?
I was just saying, think if you had like a baseball bat and someone beat you 100%. You know, or something like that. Then on February 25th of 83, the good old sheriff, his name, by the way, is Dwight Radcliffe. He asked Paul to take a handwriting test, and Paul agreed. And this is a big step in this case or thing. Paul said he would give me an actual letter and ask me to do the same envelope part just as near as I could to the envelope. That's what he said. And then on some, he would take the actual letter out and have me do them as near as I could on the letters. And I did them because I knew I wasn't responsible for the letters. He was just kind of copying them, I guess, is what he was doing. And we go back to journalist Martin Yant. He said that was not the correct way to conduct handwriting analysis. That's actually, if you guys know, handwriting analysis is a science that people have looked into now. How well it works is very much up for debate. And I kind of went down a rabbit hole there. Dubious at best.
Correct me if I'm wrong here. You went down a further rabbit hole than I have, but I've read a little bit about it. When done well, it's like a provable science type of thing, but it's often not done well.
I tell you what, yes, and it's going to the way of the polygraph almost, because there's just people grasp at the wrong things. right. is the problem, and it can be faked. And so it's a fallible system, I guess, is the easiest.
Well, it's like when you dot your eyes and you put the heart over it. Right. I could put a heart over my eyes.
Or a frowny face whenever I'm sending you stuff. It just depends, you know?
Yeah, that's true.
That's, so here's the ant. He said, that's not the proper way to test to see if someone has a certain writing style, because if they're copying from a letter, they're going to try to emulate the style. The experts said that testing was improper, which makes sense. Try to copy this. I copied it. Look, it looks just like it. What? So they didn't really say that these letters were written by.
It's amazing them. How similar these
are. They ended up just saying, well, they look a lot alike. I guess they could have been written by him, because they had to be able to say that because he'd copied them. They also searched his place, collected evidence, and boom, they charged him with attempted murder.
You know what's interesting about Paul is, you know, his behavior, number one, boy, he made it easy for them to prosecute him. But also the way in which he made it easy for them to prosecute him makes him feel like, when you're reading the story, more innocent.
Yeah, he's like, well, why am I going to fight with you on this? Like, okay, I'll write it. I didn't do it.
Exactly.
You want to come in and look around? Have at it. There's nothing here.
It's like, you want me to put my hand in blood? Sure. Why not?
Yeah. Yeah. So Paul said he called in the prosecutor, and they told the prosecutor that it was my writing on the booby trap, and I was under arrest for attempted murder and placed on a $50,000 cash bond. Boom. They got the guy. Maybe not. So we're going to go to break real quick, and when we come back, we're going to find out what happened to Paul. That's coming up after the break on Hysteria 51. Old school. Hola, David. Me amo Brent.
Bonjour, Brent. Je m'appelle David.
You didn't do Spanish. I thought if we were going to do this together, we'd do the same language.
Oh, sorry.
that's on brand for us.
I just thought romance languages was the key.
Everything I say is romantic, and that is thanks to Rosetta Stone. You guys, we've been touting these things forever. We love Rosetta Stone, and we actually are users. David, you've really been using it even for longer than I. What's your experience been like?
Oh, it's been great. The thing is, you really get to learn how to speak and think in that language with it. So it's very high on pronunciation, too. So you can, you know, learn how to speak.
And you know, our show is all about proper pronunciation.
In that pronunciation. Yeah, that's right. But they designed it for long-term retention, you know. If you don't get the pronunciation right, you say it until you do, and then, you know, that just seeps into your head.
Well, and that's why, you know, this has been trusted by experts for 30 years, and there's over 25 different languages that you can learn, and people, millions and millions of users use it because, like you said, it does seep in, and you're using it with, you know, you get speech recognition, and mm-hmm. it hears you. You get to use, like, the built-in true accent features that gives you this pronunciation, which is super convenient, and you can do it at your own time. And I don't know if you know this, but I'm all about value, and you get a one-time purchase, 25 languages. If I learned all 25 languages, I'd be so confused or really cool. I'd go in and out.
But you'd be real marketable.
But literally, though, this is something that we use, and we have, both of us have given the seal of approval because we want to do this long-term, and it's something that it works. You know, and we don't do long-term stuff like this. And this is the one that we've chosen, and we love it. So all you guys got to do, don't put off learning that language. There's no better time than right now, as we've told you 1,000 times, and it's always now. Right now. Get started. For a very limited time, Hysteria 51 listeners can get Rosetta Stone's lifetime membership for 50% off.
How much?
50%. Visit RosettaStone.com/today. That's 50% off unlimited access to 25 language courses for the rest of your unnatural life.
Wow.
Redeem, redeem, redeem. How do they do it?
Rachete, you're 50% off. Rachete. Redeem it. 50% off. RosettaStone.com/today. Do it today. After years of fine print contracts and getting ripped off by overpriced wireless providers, if we've learned anything, it's that there's always a catch. So when Brent and I heard that for a limited time, all Mint Mobile wireless plans are $15 a month when you purchase a 3-month plan, we thought, man, what's the catch? But after talking to them, it all made sense. There isn't one. Mint Mobile's secret sauce is that they sell wireless service online. They cut out the cost of retail stores and pass those sweet savings directly to you. Brent is trying to plan right now and says that it works like a charm from Chicago to Nashville as he makes his big old move. Mint Mobile is working for him. All plans come with high-speed data and unlimited talk and text delivered on the nation's largest 5G network. And you can use your own phone with any Mint Mobile plan and bring your phone number along with all your existing contacts. So ditch the overpriced wireless with Mint Mobile's limited time deal and get 3 months of premium wireless service for $15 a month. To get this new customer offer and your new 3 month unlimited wireless plan for just $15 a month, go to mintmobile.com/hysteria. That's Mint Mobile, mintmobile.com/hysteria, hysteria. Cut your wireless bill to $15 a month at mintmobile.com/hysteria. $45 upfront payment required. New customers on first 3 month plan only. Speed slower above 40 gigabytes on unlimited plan. Additional taxes, fees, and restrictions apply. See Mint Mobile for details.
Walter Cronkite. Walter Cronkite.
So, John, that brings us to Paul's trial.
Not nearly as good as Paul's Boutique.
That's true.
That is,
I didn't peg him for a Beastie fan.
That is one of my favorite albums.
Is it
I'm
really?
Glad he said that.
No shit.
Yeah. I love that album. You know, the coolest thing about that album is that it exists. And what I mean by that is, I'm anyone who's into Beastie Boys or have read about it all, you know that there's so much sampling in that album that like they couldn't make it today. They'd get their pantsuit off.
Right. And it's also, if you're really into them, it's called bestiality if you love them.
That's not true. That is a bold-faced lie.
If people ask you, just tell them you're really into bestiality. Okay, on October 24th of 1983, Paul Freshour went on trial for the attempted murder of his sister-in-law, Mary Gillespie. But get this, John and listeners, he wasn't charged with writing the threatening letters, but they were used as evidence against him. That's fucking crazy. They couldn't even prove that he wrote them, but they still used them against him.
It boggles my mind. I mean, like, you don't, like, the big thing in court cases is what evidence is allowed into discovery. And my pedestrian understanding of it is one of the ways they decide whether it's allowed into discovery is its merit in the case that's being prosecuted.
Yeah.
And if the person didn't do it, if they're not being charged with it, then like it's, oh man, it's maybe there's some sort of legal precedent that we don't understand, but it seems batshit to me.
Yeah. Yeah. There's a little bit more to it though. A handwriting expert said it was in his opinion that the writing on the envelopes, documents, postcards was made by the same person, Paul, because he had copied them.
And he's singing there, of course I try. Of course it does. I tried to make it look like that.
That's what they asked me to do. Ah, shit. And even Paul's boss testified that Paul hadn't gone to work the day the booby trap was found. Now, a lot of that sounds like it's adding up against Paul, and it is. But then we have the other side. The flip of it is Paul had an alibi for almost the entire day, including the time that the shit would have happened. But he never took the stand in his own defense. Now, that's something you see a lot. Many lawyers don't want you to do the stand, take it, because if you get you, people can let emotions take over, and that can look good or bad. And really, that's what you're going for in a jury trial, which is what this was the feeling of the jury. I don't know the right answer to that. Sometimes people should do it. Sometimes they shouldn't. That goes on a case-by-case basis.
What happened was the lawyer interviewed Paul as if stand.
You've all seen that in the shows. Night before. This is what you're going to hear. And then they just go to town on him. Yeah.
And exactly. And so we actually have tape of that. Seabot, if you'll play that quickly.
Did you order the code red?
I did the job.
Did you order the code red?
You're goddamn right I did.
Thank you. Thank you, Seba. That is Paul Freshour admitting.
If you're worried, just read the court stenographer notes on that. You'll notice that is true 100%.
100% of the time.
So he has gone on to say, though, it was a decision he would regret for the rest of his life, because you guessed it. If you thought, Paul was found guilty of attempted fucking murder. And he said the verdict was completely unexpected. And if you are innocent, I can kind of feel that that is how you would feel, being blown away by finding someone say, yeah, you did this. He said, I can't blame the jury because the jury didn't hear all the evidence, but I just couldn't believe it. I was really in shock. Now, later, not now, we're going to get into some of the evidence that they missed, important pieces. But he got 7 to 25 years. That's the max sentence. Weird range, 7 to 25. That just means that after 7 years, he was eligible for parole. And right. After 25 years, they had to let him out if, you know, he hadn't made parole. Anyway, Paul's away. Murderer caught. Letter writer caught. Nothing to worry about. Well, guess what? The fucking letters don't stop. They just keep pouring in. More and more letters. The investigator, Yant, said they were being received all over the large area of central Ohio, so a lot of people couldn't understand how Paul, fresh hour, in jail, could be mailing out all these letters from prison. How the hell do you get letters out of prison like that? Well, you don't. They talk to the warden. So the warden's like, you don't. And they're like, well, it's happening. He goes, okay, fuck you. I'll put him in solitary confinement where he gets nothing. They put him in solitary confinement, and the letters keep fucking coming.
And not only do the letters keep coming, but, well, I mean, according to Paul, who he did some research on his own behalf, you know, after the fact, and actually asked the FBI to get involved, it is said that almost every person in Circleville, Ohio, at one point received a letter or two.
Yeah.
Like, that's how widespread these letters
were. Every single one of them postmarked from Columbus, even though Paul was imprisoned across the state in Lima. Martin Yant said that the warden became so convinced that Paul was not writing the letters because he said, quote, full-scale investigations were conducted twice, possibly three times, during which Paul Freshour was put into isolation. And the warden of the prison then wrote letters to Paul's wife saying that as far as he was concerned, it was impossible for Paul to be writing these letters and sending them from prison. Everything you get in and sent out letter-wise in prison is read. There's no, you know.
And logged. Mm-hmm. And like they knew the exact amount of mail that he had sent outbound.
Yeah, the warden actually said it sounded to him like the wrong man was in prison. And according to the warden, and by all accounts, he was a model prisoner. And he was for 7 fucking years until the first time he was eligible for parole. And he was denied because they said he's still writing letters. Letters that the warden even said he's not fucking writing them.
I mean, the story just gets worse for this guy. Think about it. You've wasted 7 years of your life in prison. You're going to have to sit in here longer because you keep writing these damn letters.
Right.
I mean, like, think about the circular logic there. Like, I've been in solitary. You literally know I can't have written those letters.
Well, speaking of circular, guess who gets a fucking letter now? Paul. It read,
yeah.
Now, when are you going to believe you aren't going to get out of there? I told you 2 years ago, when we set them up, they stay set up. Don't you listen at all, question mark?
P.S. Did you check out Cronkite?
Yeah. So this at time, luckily, Martin Yant, the investigator, the journalist, he stepped in and reviewed the sheriff's investigative files, and he uncovered evidence never mentioned in the trial. Here's a quote from him. Mary Gillespie told the sheriff one of the other bus drivers told her that she had been driving the same road about 20 minutes before Mary found that booby trap at the exact site. And when she went by the very same intersection, there was a yellow El Camino parked there. A large man with sandy hair was standing there, and when he saw her come, he turned around and acted like he was going to the bathroom or something, but seemed to also be avoiding any kind of identification. The description of the individual does not fit Paul Freshour at all.
But you know who it does fit? Walter fucking Cronkite. Oh, wait, that's not true.
No. Bitch. And we all said Paul had a very solid alibi for that whole time. There was zero attempt to follow up at all on that lead. And if they had, then now this is all the quote, and if they had, as I say, they would have found that another possible suspect in this case had a brother who had an El Camino, meaning they know probably, or there's other people that this could have been.
Right. One of the other suspects, one of the other people they think could be responsible for the Circleville letters, has a relative who drives a yellow.
Of course, it's 1976. Names. 3 people that don't have an El Camino in that town. Yellow, you know. What the fuck, though, John? All joking aside, that is some horse shit. And why is it that it seems like, and this is not cop bashing, this is just me looking into some of these stories, real stories, not TV stuff, real stuff, especially like the thing that's coming into mind is like the West Memphis 3. When someone investigating gets something in their mind, that's what happened, evidence be damned.
Well, yeah, not only that, but when you have ulterior motives, like the sheriff wanting it to happen, the sheriff working with the prosecutor to make it happen, also, it gets even more convoluted because we're talking about a number of crimes over a series of years.
Yeah.
Let's just say, I don't believe this, but let's just say that the original letters were by Paul Freshour. Mm-hmm. And let's also say that even something nefarious took place and Paul was involved the night that the husband died. Mm-hmm. I again, don't believe it, but let's just say that happened. That doesn't mean that someone else didn't pick up the mantle and copycat the letters. Right. That doesn't mean that someone else didn't put up those signs and set up the pistol for Mary to discover. Right. Like, this isn't necessarily one person orchestrating thousands of letters over dozens of years. Mm-hmm. It could be an isolated incident that kind of took on a life of its own. I mean, that's a possibility, too.
Yeah. In May of 94... Freshour was granted parole after serving 10 years in prison, and he maintained his innocence the entire time he was incarcerated and continued to until the day he died. He died in 2012 at age 70. And he told Unsolved Mysteries, he was on that old episode. He said, "I like to see someone really look into the case and the letters, reopen the letter part of it, and get in and find out who wrote the letters. I'd also like to see someone look into my former brother-in-law's death. Look, that's not my family anymore. That's my past. I'm not even going to look back at it. I've got a new family and a new future, but I would still like to see someone look at that incident real close and the letters." I mean, you got to kind of move on.
We make a lot of jokes around the story today, but someone died and another person lost years of their life.
Yeah. Sad. It is very sad.
I assuming that we're correct. I mean, we haven't gotten to our final disposition of the whole story, but assuming we're correct I think we both don't think that Paul was the ultimate mastermind behind the Circleville letters. It is very sad that he wound up paying the price.
Right. And then we kind of told you about this earlier in 93, the warning to the show, Unsolved Mysteries, was the last known Circleville letter from the original official writer. That's the bulk of the story. There's a lot more to it. That's the horrible, but there was a lot of letters and a lot of people's lives that were hurt by these. We're going to go to break. When we come back, we're going to talk some of the crazy shit that is tied to the story with the outliers in it. That's coming up next on Hysteria 51.
Enjoy all your favorite sports like never before at BetMGM. Sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. When you register with BetMGM, you'll get instant access to a variety of parlay selection features, live betting options, and the best daily promotions in the business. And with BetMGM at your fingertips, every play and every game matters more than ever. Place your money line, prop, or parlay bets with the king of sportsbooks today. Sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. BetMGM and GameSense remind you to play responsibly. 21 plus and present in Ohio, subject to eligibility requirements. Rewards are non-withdrawable bonus bets that expire in 7 days. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER in partnership with MGM Northfield Park.
Cronkite.
So there's some crazy shit around this. One of the things that we kind of glossed over, I said this in the beginning, but whoever the writer was, they knew a hell of a lot about that town and its little intimate secrets. That's impressive.
Yeah, yeah. Because, that's the thing. There were letters. We didn't cover most of the letters.
Yeah, we
can, right?
I mean,
we
like
covered
you said, there's just so many letters. And you can go online if this is something that you're really interested in. There are... obviously not all the letters are released. Some people didn't even come forward. Some people kept them. Some people destroyed them when they got them. A lot of letters though you can find online. It has a very weird way of writing it. It looks like someone wrote it, so it's not their handwriting. They're like, it's like if you draw every letter and make it look weird, and they're tall and some and thin. And,
yeah. And then also there was plenty that were typed.
Yeah. There's different. Yeah. You're right. You know, it's just, but they all came from Columbus, you know, so.
Well, and you know, the interesting thing about this is we're not talking about, we're not talking about the need to do like futuristic DNA analysis that wasn't available. Like we're talking like, you know, so when they were typewritten, what type of typewriter was that? I mean, this is like crime solving in the 50s.
Right, other things, you know, we've kind of alluded to some of the little clues, some of the little things that came out in the case. Mary Gillespie and Gordon Massey were indeed having an affair. After the fact, yeah, right. I mean, they were boning, but they said after the fact.
Yeah, yeah. They, in fact, they were known to meet at a bar that was owned by one of Massey's buddies. There was a bar that was halfway between Massey's hometown in Circleville. And
halfway between there and the post office in Columbus.
Coincidence? Uh-oh. Yeah. But no, in fact, there was even a story that one night Mary had been on her way to that bar and ran out of gas and had to call her husband to come get her.
I'm out here doing, I'm trying to have a Tupperware party. What? That was a thing in the
70s. Just come get me.
Remember Tupperware parties? Now they're women have like, I don't know, like sex toy parties and shit. The world's changed.
They're having no parties right now. It's all the multi-level marketing stuff they do through Facebook instead now. Instead of doing the, hey, make everybody get together for a, you know, an Avon party or a Tupperware party. It's, hey, if you follow me on Twitter or Facebook, you can hear about this wonderful makeup that I use that makes me look 10 years younger, and this awesome supplement drink that I drink that makes me lose 10 pounds a week.
Yes, yes. And if you're interested in pyramid schemes, that's cbot at hysteria51.com. Oh, man. So the letter writer also made some accusations. He accused Roger Klein. Now, Roger Klein was the prosecutor of Paul. He accused Klein of getting a school teacher preggers and trying to have her killed to cover it up. So that was said, and an investigation carried out by an Ohio TV show turned up that a local family confirmed the rumors that the prosecutor, Roger Klein, had gotten a school teacher pregnant. Klein was investigated but eventually cleared, and he became an appellate judge before retiring in 2013. Wow, this town's got a lot of little secrets. Now, again, we can't say that he tried to have her killed, but damn. They accused the county coroner, Dr. Ray Carroll, that they, I'm saying they, the writer or writers, whoever they are, of being a pederast. And then later he was charged with 12 counts of gross immorality, sex crimes, corruption of a minor, pornography, obscenity, and indecent exposure in December of 93. That came to be true. How does he know all, or they, or whatever? How did they know all this stuff? Did anyone look into the Catholic priest? people coming in and giving their...
confessions? Yeah. I mean, it's crazy the shit you hear kids talking about when you're driving school buses.
Well, no shit, right? Also, remember David Longberry, the man who Mary assumed was the writer? He had tried to bone her, and she's like, no, and all that
stuff. Yeah, speaking of school bus drivers.
Well, he forcibly raped an 11-year-old girl in 1999, went on the run, and is now dead. So, yay for that part of it, and oh my God for the rest. What the fuck?
And per capita, how many lunatics were there in Circleville?
We should have had the Brohio podcast on for this.
Yeah, no kidding.
Just ask them, like, what the hell's going on in your little hamlet? So Paul, he did, for a while, he had set up his own website about getting, after he got paroled, and... there's a PDF I'm going to put in the show notes where you can find all the information that he had from his website.
It's really intriguing. He includes the letters that he wrote to the FBI, kind of pointing at the evidence that obviously he isn't guilty. But you know, but the tone of the things that he writes aren't so much just. I mean, it's like, yes, obviously I'm not guilty, but I want you to look into this because we need to figure this out. Like
not only
he's
me,
still go team on figuring out who is guilty.
And then after he's out, he's like, we need to figure out what happened. Yeah. He accused Sheriff Radcliffe. He's the one who he had said that he wanted to become the president of the National Sheriff's Association. So he swept this under the rug. True or not, if you can say that or not, Radcliffe did conduct a shitty and shoddy investigation. He just didn't follow up. And when Yant was looking into it, he just found the big one was the El Camino, but there was other things he just didn't follow up with anything. And like we said, also the letter to Unsolved Mysteries, it seemed protective of the sheriff. There's more to it. While the letter sent to Paul while he was in prison appeared to hint that the writer was close to the sheriff or the police. So maybe, well, the big question is, before I say that, is who was it? Those are the questions. And one of them that you kind of alluded to, that's the big one, is the theory that it was multiple people. Not just one person. David Longberry at first, and then Karen Freshour following her divorce from Paul, people said, maybe, that she was doing it. Other theories say that the writer was the man in yellow with the yellow hat who had the monkey in
man
town.
With the yellow hat.
No, the man with the yellow El Camino, or maybe his brother that they were talking about. Maybe it was the police then took over on some of the shit. I don't know, John. What do you think? Where do your head fall in this?
So I don't have like a here's exactly what I think transpired, like line by line. But here are a few thoughts. First, I think that Paul Freshour, to a large extent, was not guilty.
Yeah.
I certainly don't think he was guilty of putting the gun in the box. And so what he went to jail for. Whether he was in some way involved with letters at some point, I can't say for certain. Obviously, these are all weird people. I don't think he was. I think he was kind of an innocent bystander in a lot of this. They say that his ex-wife, Karen, was very combative and that she was difficult to deal with and not fun.
What?
Not fun times.
What? Karen was hard to handle. What did she want? The OG the police Karen. Manager? Bring me the manager.
Bring me.
I'm the judge. So, bring me the judge manager then.
The judge man. I don't know. She seems like a suspicious character in this story. Ultimately, I think there were copycat letters going on. I don't think there was one person who over the course of two decades wrote thousands of letters and was like this ultimate criminal mastermind. At the end of the day, Mary was having an affair. It probably started with letters from that other, I forget what was his name, the other school bus driver.
Longberry.
Longberry. And he was probably the one threatening. And it was probably Longberry that
got in the scuffle, the husband, and was shot at.
Went to get after, after talking to him on the phone. That's probably where I come out on it. The most interesting part of this to me is, or curious part, is that there wasn't like a more investigation, or we haven't learned more about like Ron's death.
Yeah.
It is so fucking bizarre. The circumstances around his death, not a drinker. He was drunk. Knows the area like the back of his hand, ran fast enough into a tree
to die. Didn't see the corner coming kind of thing. Yeah,
exactly. And most importantly, fired off a shot. Like, I'm going to go get him now.
Now, if he had been drunk, he hasn't been drunk while driving, missed a corner and shot into the distance for fun. I mean, that's just
for fun.
That's just a Saturday.
I mean, that's Tuesday, I that's just so bizarre to me. That part of the story more than anything else just is. And the thing is, Freshour wasn't even implicated in that. Nobody was, because it wasn't considered a crime.
Right.
So I don't have all the answers. I don't think that Freshour was guilty. I do think that whoever was was never caught for those crimes.
I agree. I don't have a ton to add. Like you said, it feels like a crime of opportunity on top of a crime of opportunity kind of situation. And that is, for better or worse, unfortunately, for worse, I'm sure, how a lot of this stuff happens. And it is unfortunate that more people didn't look into it or take it seriously. And as far as how much Paul had to do, I don't know. As far as with it, and if it was absolutely zero, that is terrible and terrifying. And my gut kind of tells me, for whatever reason, that he didn't have a lot to do with it. So, yeah.
And the lesson here, C-Bot, is that words hurt. Okay. Just remember that.
Love hurts. Love scars.
Oh, also remember, dear listener, if you're planning on emailing C-Bot, that his words hurt.
It's true. That is true.
I mean, careful what you wish for.
Speaking of wishing, let us know your wishes. How can they let us know their wishes and their thoughts on this week's topic?
Go to Zuckerberg.com, better known as Facebook.com, and search Hysteria Nation. It is our Facebook discussion group where we are spied on by Zuckerberg, but also talk about all this stuff and a whole lot more.
Well, we're spied on by him there. We're remote viewed by the government. It just happens. You know, what are you going
to
do?
I mean, at this point, the NSA is listening to everything anyway through all of our various devices, so who cares?
That's right. Facebook.com/Hysteria51Pod. That is also our Facebook page. You can follow us there. Patreon.com/Hysteria51. We get mad blurry hysteria episodes every 2 weeks. Lots of radio dramas, up all nights, all sorts of goodies. This week, we've been lacking on this, but I do want to do a real quick shout out to Philip Wood, one of our newest members on Patreon, and we're going to do a lot more shout outs from Patreon. But Philip, thank you so much for doing it. That's how it really helps us out so much. And if you want to hear yourself on the show, the long
Hell yes,
overdue
Philip.
Voicemails. We're starting them back up, 773-669-7277. Again, 773-669-7277. So if you don't want to be Philip Wood, you want to hear your name on the show, well, you should be Philip Wood because, you know, pay us, motherfucker. No, I'm joking. You want to hear your voice on the show? John, let's hear a voicemail.
Let's do it.
Hi, Hysteria 51. I go by Masked Llama, and I am...
Who doesn't?
Calling because it seems silly responding to an episode from about 3 years ago, but wanted to talk about your Satanic Panic and D&D.
One of my favorite episodes.
And yeah, I had my own Satanic Panic experience. Mom always grew up telling me that Dungeons and Dragons was evil. So when I went to college, a Christian college, by the way, and found a group of people playing Dungeons and Dragons, imagine my surprise to find that it was basically people just sitting around playing pretend to a bunch of rules. And so I joined their group and had some fun when mom found
out.
It's
true. It's so tame.
Right? So I had to explain to mom that, yes, it is just a game of people playing pretend to a bunch of rules. And as far as talking about D&D being useful in helping children, you should check out a game called No Thank You Evil, which is designed by Monty Cook and Shauna Germain? I can't quite remember. Sorry. But
sounds like not today, yeah. Satan.
It is designed to be D&D for kids. My niece plays it. She thinks it's a lot of fun. Right, that's all I've got to share. Have a good day, y'all.
Yeah, I wish I would have grown up playing D&D. I didn't. And John, it would have been something that we would have, I think, loved or gravitated to it if we had had that. We just, it wasn't on our, it was on our radar. We knew of it. We just didn't do it back then.
Yeah, I mean, we...
We were trying to get laid way too early and drink.
We were so much cooler than we were. Like, I would play now. Yeah, I don't know 18-year-old John
That's what
would.
I'm saying. Like, I don't, you know, exactly.
We were out, like, breaking shit and
doing
drinking too much.
Things. Yeah, John and I, believe it or not, we weren't the best of children, but we never got in trouble, which probably made us even worse. Anyway,
good grades cover up a lot of shit, man. I don't know what to tell you.
Yeah, good grades, and they don't ever look your way. That's my bet.
They don't. They just don't.
Let's do another one.
Good evening, gentlemen. My name is Thomas. Just calling in to let y'all in on a theory I had for y'all. Oh, wrong, madong, ghost shit.
Theories.
The one theory that y'all didn't take on in the show was the possibility of an H2S gas leak. Maybe it was an old whaling ship and all the decaying material turned into H2S.
On the boat.
Now
yeah.
It is a heavy gas, so it would go to the lowest point of the ship and highly flammable. Y'all have a good day and fuck you, C-Bot.
I don't know anything about that. That's an interesting take, though. You know, it's I guess there's a connection from old whaling. You know what I mean? But
that was the if you didn't hear, he's talking about the Orang Medan, the ghost.
Yeah, that
ship
was
that
we had Jerry Polly from Hillbilly Horror Stories on that one, I believe. Right? Was it?
Oh wow, good memory.
I think so.
I am lucky to remember if we've actually covered a topic or not. People are like, hey, have you done? I'm like, well, it's a good question. I know we've talked about it. Because we've talked about every topic.
Right, well, people send me, like, what's coming out next week? And I'm like, we're, like, five episodes beyond that. I have no clue. You know what I mean? I don't mean that rude. I always have to look because usually we're, you know, we try to plan 10 at a time. Now, that doesn't always happen, but that's our plans. And then you get...
Yeah, we're recording the Easter episode tomorrow. Yeah,
right. if 2020 hadn't taken a shit on us, we probably would be way ahead. Like, but hey, you know.
That's true. That's true.
One more. Let's do one more.
All right.
Hi, my name is Stephanie Lynn. I'm part of a group on Facebook, but I listen to your podcast all the time. And I wanted to let you know that I almost never learn anything. You guys are crazy stupid. Stupid crazy, whichever way you... I love it. It's fun to listen to, and sometimes I don't understand what you're talking about, but it's still funny. And I just want to say I love your show. Just simply,
well, neither do we.
So much fun. Not really the content. Not that I don't like the content. I'm just saying I really think you guys are fun. Anyway, thanks and keep up the good work. Bye.
She was so much more apologetic than she needed to
be. I know. It was like, funny. It was funny.
Like, oh, honey, you're right. We're horrible. But we know it. I mean, like, think about it. I always say when we get, every now and then, we get very serious messages from people. They always start with, you know, like very formal. And it goes on to tell us how big of idiots we are because we didn't consider the fact that black-eyed children are actually this very specific type of demon.
Yeah.
Like it's always some inane thing. It's not, you know, was there a second gunman on the grassy knoll? Like, it's always some inane, weird, but that we are just fucking complete morons for
not
having considered.
And they are the loudest squeaky wheel because they will make sure that they tell everyone on every forum and everywhere that we did something that we didn't, you know, mention that.
I always say the same thing to them. Like, amen. Literally the show begins with, we tell everybody. The truth is out there, but you won't find it here.
it's, you know, it's no one's opinion but our own.
Well, and conspiracy.
Well, that's true.
And I'm not taking ownership of the shit that he says. It's all I'm saying.
Again, 773-669-7277. Again, that's 773-669-7277. John and I were going to wait to do these in person like we always do. And that's been months. So we gave up and we're doing them remote. Now, and it worked fine, but we were just holding off to do them in person because we thought that would be a fun idea. And 2020 got the best of us as far as that
goes.
Yeah,
it did. And it did. And speaking of 2020 getting the best of us, Brent, in a week or two, we will be releasing our best of 2020 episode. And that is not a best of episode where you're going to have to listen to clips of old episodes. But rather,
is it best of or our wrap up episode? Should we say it that way?
Our wrap up. That's probably
everything
a better way to
I
say
do
it.
Is
yeah,
the
our
best
2020
I've ever
wrap.
Done because I'm constantly bettering myself, and so that seems like a weird bar to bring up when everyone just knows that.
Well, I don't better myself because how can you better the best?
Oh darling. Cheese muffins?
Oh, Santa, I've been waiting for you. Sorry.
Oh, tis the season for that horse shit. Anyway, we're going to have a fun little wrap up. So if you guys, here's if you got a clip or you got a segment or something like that you want to talk about or us to bring up or talk about, let us know. And if you got timestamps, fucking more power to you. Let us know those because
also if you have any story of Fortean stories that actually were from this year specifically,
let us know
that you want us to cover.
We'll
let us
something
know
we don't do, which is that's not exactly what it's going to be, but it'd be a little bit more of a ramble cast. That's something that we don't do on here too often, so it'll be fun. So that's something to look forward to.
We do a ramble cast, we just happen to throw interspersed facts in between.
Interspersed facts, which that's that's usually my that's my defense in court, usually is what I try for. Anyway, I don't know. We got robots to tend to. With that said,
all
John,
right, let's go.
I've been Brent.
I've been John.
He's been Conspiracy Bot.
Stay woke, meet sex.
It was terrible. It was just terrible. I'll never get over it as long as I live.
That's it for another edition of Hysteria 51. John and Brent will be back next week with yet more of the unexplained, the unexplored, and the unheard of. Oh, if it's unheard of, how will they know about it? Anyway, if you want to suggest a topic, give us your thoughts, or just make fun of Conspiracy Bot, that's my favourite, join us in our Facebook discussion group, Hysteria Nation. Just log on to Facebook and search Hysteria Nation, or you can always tweet us at Hysteria51Pod.
You've been listening to a Fourth Hand Joint.
Enjoy all your favorite sports like never before at BetMGM. Sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. When you register with BetMGM, you'll get instant access to a variety of parlay selection features, live betting options, and the best daily promotions in the business. And with BetMGM at your fingertips, every play and every game matters more than ever. Place your money line, prop, or parlay bets with the king of sportsbooks today. Sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. BetMGM and GameSense remind you to play responsibly. 21 plus and present in Ohio, subject to eligibility requirements. Rewards are non-withdrawable bonus bets that expire in 7 days. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER in partnership with MGM Northfield Park.